Well, I have the Ukrainian and the China guy talking to a German controller in English. So, you know, 90% of my customers are foreigners. And if I listen to the speed at some of the stuff going down here, I'm thinking, well, if I can talk at that speed, but my radio calls would be Roger and say again.
Not to mention the degradation of situation awareness by not being able to really hear what's going on with everybody else in the airspace.
Yeah. That's always an issue as far as language. One thing I was going to point out on this one, when Lutz is describing the system and integration there, but also the amount of personnel throughout Europe. Here in the States, you have that general thought that, well, it must be inefficient as being run by the government, which that narrative is probably true in some cases, but at least in the instance of air traffic, with, as you were saying, there's 400 guys doing this, or at O'Hare, there's you know, even less. From my travels in Europe, they ask me, and they think we're insane that we actually pull this off. But what you have here in the States is the most productive and the most efficient and most cost-effective system by far in the world.
Well, it was designed bottom up.
Exactly.
Instead of taking all these countries.
On the other hand, I just got to say one thing here, and this is from a personal point of view. You have controllers working 6 days on, 1 day off. Now, I'm very sorry, but I don't care where I fly to. I'm not happy flying in an airspace where there's a guy sitting who's been pushing 6 days of work, 10 hours a day. That scares the hell out of me.
Well, Europeans are much better about vacation time and time off in the first place. You know, 2 hour lunches and 6 week vacations.
Most of our facilities in this country, because there's so many controllers that are retiring. And there's such an influx of new people coming in that a lot of facilities are forced to work these 6 day work weeks, 10 hour days. And I know that we're short on time, but I just wanted to make one other little point to kind of change it a little bit. But one of the main things that we're doing here, we have a lot of air traffic controllers here at the show, is, you know, we're trying to bridge the gap to communication between pilots and controllers for the people that are flying here. The people that are here, come over and talk to us, because we want them to be comfortable talking to controllers. We want them to know that these are just normal people doing a normal job, and, you know, they're not Big Brother watching out after them, and they're, you know, we want them to be comfortable talking to controllers. And
well, and on that note, we do have a call-in number if anybody wants to call in and ask a question personally. We are running a little short on time, so if you have questions today, you might want to call in and get those in. We will be back with the ATC Hour 3 more times this week, so if you don't get to us today, you can try again. But that number is 920-230-7987. And if you want to ask these guys any questions in the next couple minutes, I'm sure they'll be happy to talk to you, as Kelly says.
We'd normal people question. With
somewhat normal answers.
Yeah, we get all ranges of questions. But
is the word any?
Yes. Yeah. But I just, you know, it's just important to us that people are comfortable talking to ATC. You know, I just talked to somebody the other day that, you know, you hear from them all the time. People that avoid going into talking to air traffic control whenever they go out to fly, because they just don't want, they're just scared or intimidated by it. And we want to try to relieve that fear.
Well, and the worst of it is the ones that probably need the most benefit from talking are the ones that are the least likely to venture to do so.
Right. Because one time that they're going to need to talk to an air traffic controller, they don't have the ability to do it.
And that's actually something that's universal, and we have exactly the same problem in Germany. I'm always in my flying club and flying around just trying to encourage people to talk to air traffic control. Come down to the facility, see the people. We're just normal guys and girls, and we're not there to intimidate. We're there to help you, but we can't help you if you don't call in. So we definitely want to want the people to use the...
That brings up a good point, because we do have a booth down here between the air traffic control tower and the flight line. But if you're here at the show and you want to stop by, come talk to us and we can try to set you up with somebody that works in a local facility. Go in there and see what these guys are doing. Go into your local tower. Meet the air traffic controllers that you're working with. Build some kind of a relationship with them, but see exactly what they're doing. You'll kind of get a little bit better understanding of, you know, what's going on when you see the other side of it. Maybe you'll feel a little bit more comfortable. You just kind of,
It's a two-way street, Kelly, as far as, you know, especially with some of the local folks come in and we understand some of their situations and some of their questions, it can be easily answered by seeing something, but also something that's been, why are you doing this?
Are you with them?
At that point. Yeah.
Okay, we've got a caller that called in, and apparently he's got an interesting question, so we're going to go ahead and pipe it in for you guys.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
Oh, hello. My name is Ben Armin. Yes, I've flown in the European airspace, and I've also flown domestically here in general aviation. And I've used CPDLC, controller to pilot data link, in the past, and that overcomes a lot of the language barriers. But every time we make a radio call or receive a heading or an altitude change, there's a cost for that transmission being received and repeated back. And every instruction requires a cost that is billed to the airline at a later date. How could that possibly be sustainable in a general aviation environment in below 10,000 feet airspace here in the United States and be economically viable for private pilots?
Well, let me ask you this. Where exactly where were you flying when you had this cost?
I've flown to Frankfurt. I've flown to Tel Aviv. I've flown to Paris.
So this was all in Europe?
Yes. Now,
okay.
Here in America, if I'm flying from Ohio to, to Indianapolis, below 10,000 feet, why would I want to pay for a heading change and altitude change to be part of the ATC environment?
Well, I have no idea why you'd want to pay.
We understand that in Germany as well. We understand that you don't want to pay, but the bottom line for that is that because we are a privatized system, my family needs to eat as well, so I need to get a paycheck, and that's what you're paying for. It's not necessarily the best way to do business, but that's the model they've chosen, and unfortunately that's what we're stuck with at the moment. But I agree with you. It's not right, and certainly there should be other ways of dealing with these things.
And that's the direction if in the U.S. here we start pointing that way. Of course, right now it's based on general taxation, but also you have a user fee of a sort, I suppose, as far as fuel surcharges and things of that nature that are funding the system, more or less based on the amount of usage. Obviously, you put fuel in your aircraft and you're supporting that part of the system. But once it gets to a nickel and dime, you want a visual approach, it's this. You want an instrument approach, it's that. You have a economic incentive to not use the system, or to cut corners, or to possibly get into a situation a little further than you would have, because the minute that you pick up that mic, or if we had a data link, the minute you start coming back and forth for something, now it's in your pocket, and that certainly can impact your decision making process.
That was a great question for the caller. So, if anybody else wants to give a call again, that number is 920-230-7987.
They tried that CPDLC down in Miami, and American Airlines bought the equipment, had it on their planes, and they pulled it. The equipment's just brand new, just sitting in the corner.
We scrapped
with
the whole thing
on.
A few years ago. I don't think that was a good idea, but
it kind of
apparently cost money.
Put on hold somewhat. Permanently. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see it come back around.
I haven't seen much about it, but it's kind of, because of that, I believe from what I've heard, a lot of airlines are scared to buy equipment for the fact that,
well, absolutely.
Are we going to buy this? And then it's all of a sudden not going to be in use 2 years later, and we're going to have to do something else.
Well, there's so much tremendous things that you could do, especially with routine information and routine clearances and radio changes with a data link, but of course it gets a little nefarious when, like the previous caller just says, now you have the charge on that.
All right. Well, it's been a great discussion. So we'll be back again, and I'm not sure our schedule more
Thursday,
than I do. I think
it?
Thursday is our
I
next.
I think it's Thursday.
Is our next
not
run-up.
At 10 a.m.
So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I think
yes,
we're going to be on
yes,
the roll
we'll be
here.
Back.
So.
Saturday is at 9 a.m. and Thursday and Friday are at 10 a.m.
I'm glad you know.
I've got this
Kelly
little OCD issue, and things get stuck in my head.
This is the ATC Hour. We've been speaking with Kelly Richardson of
Thank
NECA.
You.
Thank you. And Lutz Pritchoff from all over the place. Mostly Germany,
more than
though.
Yeah,
right.
And Grant Anderson, all with the various air traffic control representations around the world. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And this has been Push to Talk with Magneto Mel. Wireless Mike is up next. You are listening to EAA Radio on 1210 AM, 93.7 FM, and around the world at www.airventure.org/radio.